Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
All right, good day, everyone. Welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. David and I, the founder, are going to do a joint interview with one of his best buddies and a guy that I'm getting to know pretty well. We just had some lunch together. So ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce you to Mr. Bruce Wang, the owner of a company called Microjig here in Orlando, Florida. So I'm not going to tell you too much about this. I'm going to let him tell the story. But ladies and gentlemen, welcome Bruce Wang to the show. Bruce.
Hey,
welcome. Appreciate
it. Thank you. Yeah. Great to see you guys.
It's good to be here. So why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are? Who are you, Bruce?
Who is Bruce Wang? That's a very loaded question, right?
Yeah, it's deep, huh?
Yeah, you can go so many ways with that. But I guess I would say that I'm here to be the best service I can to, you know, my community, the best service I can to humanity, and I've just so chosen the craft of enterprise to do it in. And, you know, me and my fiance also have a humanitarian initiative where we actually help Rohingya refugees out in the border of Myanmar. So she's the founder of that one. So I'll give her all the credit there.
Wow. So you guys are doing quite a few things. So you have your organization, which we'll kind of unpack there. And then you guys also have your humanitarian focus where you're helping serve refugees and helping that. So let's start with your organization. Talk to us about what your business is.
Sure. One of the businesses is Microjig. So we're a designer, developer of innovative consumer tools. So tools for woodworkers, craftsmen, DIYers. So we make really interesting products that we sell to, you know, retailers and resellers all across the world, like Amazon, Lowe's, Home Depot, Walmart, to small niche players like mom-pop hardware stores like Miller Hardware, to multi-store chains and franchises like Woodcraft and Rockler and Lee Valley. And we're lucky enough to serve around 17 countries right now. So,
holy moly! Okay, so you guys have this product for woodworkers. That's difficult to say, but you guys have this product for them that does what for them? What does this product do?
Well, we essentially make the number one device for keeping your fingers prevented from amputations, getting your fingers cut on table saws. I like to say we keep our people's fingers from getting shorter than they need to be. Yeah. And they also help people not only on table saws, router tables, bandsaws, joiners. And we've created a whole system and suite of products that serve, you know, to that need, you know, whether you need to cut, you know, really fine and intricate parts, to cutting, you know, big tapers, to, you know, resurfacing material. There's a lot of cool things that we make to help people keep people safer and smarter in their shop and in the field.
That's incredible. So you're in 17 countries, so you're a global company, and you're in retailers all over, from big companies like What were some of the big ones that you guys
Amazon is one of our largest channels.
Okay.
We also work with Lowe's, Home Depot, Walmart's just coming on. And we actually work with a lot of the different Amazon channels as well. Amazon Japan, Amazon Mexico, Amazon Canada, and Amazon Australia. And then like Lee Valley, which is another international company as well. So yeah, quite a few.
Wow.
And Menards is another big one of ours. So Menards, they have about 300 locations in the Midwest. So we work with them as well. So
I absolutely love walking around like a Home Depot or Lowe's and like looking at all the cool innovation projects and tools. So I've walked by your product and I've seen it like on the shelves here, you know, in a Lowe's or a Home Depot. And that's incredible. How in the world, we have a lot of listeners out there who are trying to build a product for themselves and maybe get it into these retailers. How did you get into Lowe's, Home Depot, Walmart? Like, that's huge.
Okay, well, yeah. So a couple of stories there, I guess. Well, when we first got into Lowe's actually was a fun story, because we were in a trade show, one of our industry trade shows, and I met with a friend of mine from another company in the field, and he introduced me to his VP of sales, who also happened to be best friends with the buyer at Lowe's at the time. And, you know, so, and he had a consulting business where he was offering, you know, kind of sales representation for manufacturers. So, and it goes to tell you the power of relationships, because 2 weeks after the show, he's having a beer with his buddy and saying, hey, send us pricing. We're interested in the product. And, you know, just a few weeks later, we closed the deal to, you know, be in 500 locations for their innovation end cap. And we kicked that off. So that was a really fun program. Home Depot, I reached out to their buyer via LinkedIn, actually, and, you know, let the buyer know that, hey, we're the number one best-selling table saw accessory on Amazon. And they were very much interested in getting that onto their platform, and they're saying that they were all about it. So we kicked off the agreement and started moving towards that. Walmart actually reached out to us. They're building out their e-commerce division, as you know, so jet.com and walmart.com. So they reached out to us and said, you know, we see your guys' product everywhere. We want to have it. You know, we want to have it in walmart.com. So
that's awesome. So when you guys were building this or starting this company, which I would love to hear the story, when you guys were looking at the total addressable market and you were looking at the need that you guys were fixing, obviously you're one of your things that you say is you help keep fingers on, you know, attached to the hands as long as possible, right? How many finger incidents, I'm curious, like how many finger incidents are there per year in wood shops, woodworking shops? Like how big is it? Is the marketplace?
Yeah, well, great question. Well, and there was two parts to your question. So the first part was like, you know, when we thought about, you know, the TAM, total addressable market, well, that wasn't actually how we thought about things when the company was first started, right? Oftentimes, and you probably hear this with other things, you know, oftentimes a company started because, you know, you want to create something that you want to use yourself. And maybe you want to start using with the for some of your friends or, you know, your community that you really care about. And that's exactly what happened, you know, when my father founded the company in, you know, 2001, you know, and he had been a woodworker and a craftsman, you know, for most of his adult life. And, you know, just had a passion for the craft and, you know, got out of the restaurant industry and the restaurant business and started making jigs in his garage. So it's very much started in the garage. And we were just trying to make something that was of quality and something good. And there was no topic such as, you know, total addressable market. There was no cap rates, no fundraising environment like that, you know, at that time, or at least for what, where we were at. But then it's kind of evolved. Now, you know, we've sold over, you know, 600,000 products worldwide. And our flagship products, you know, trusted by hundreds of thousands of people, you know, to help them do their creative work. But the way we see the marketplace still going forward, we see about, you know, there's about 10 million table saws on the marketplace that are in use. There are about 50,000 table saw accidents that happen every year. So that breaks down to one every 10 minutes. So it's about an amputation, you know, one amputation every 9 minutes or so, 9 times 10 minutes. So it's kind of insane when you think about like how long, you know, table saws have been around, and it's like, you know, it's just a silly thing that shouldn't exist anymore. There, you know, the tools are there, the education is there. You know, I much think of it like, you know, like rock climbing. Rock climbing used to be an extremely dangerous sport. You know, people scaling up tall rocks and falling off to their, you know, death or getting severely injured. But now the risk of injury from rock climbing is so infinitesimal because there's the products available, there's education, there's training centers, and there's really just the tools and the gear that help prevent that. So we can see that, and we can see, you know, using these power tools as a safe sport, as I say it. And, you know, one of our, you know, kind of mission critical objectives is to, you know, provide that kind of global safety belt between, you know, people's fingers and, you know, spinning carbide. You know, we also see that, you know, the market is, you know, despite, I think, what people think is continuing to show resilience and growth in terms of, gosh, I think the statistic is, you know, 10,000 baby boomers turn, you know, 65 every day. You know, so we're seeing a growing marketplace, and there's over 41 million people interested in woodworking in Facebook. So there's quite a bit of people that, you know, we've barely just, you know, scratched the surface of the impact that we want to create.
So one every 10 minutes. So during this podcast interview, ladies and gentlemen, as you're listening in, maybe four fingers will be impacted. So your goal is to reduce the finger injuries here in the world, actually. So let's go back to how this actually got started. Your father, you guys were working in your garage, so it started at your garage, and you guys were building something for yourselves. What kind of products was your dad building?
Oh gosh, you know, my dad's a very particular and interesting guy, as many inventors and creators are. And so, you know, he's not a traditional type of furniture builder by any means. You know, I don't think he really likes to create many, many artistic things. He's more of a functional jig builder. So like if he's trying to accomplish something, you know, around the shop, or if he's trying to, you know, build something for, you know, the restaurant at the time, you know, he'd go out and make it, whether it be a buffet table or whether it be something else. And he loved to build the functional stuff. Well, when he went into the lab, if you will, during this period of when he was in the founding of Microjig, you know, he was actually working on cutting boards, a really popular project. So it required the cutting of multiple thin strips to put this board together, you know, as a gift for, you know, his family and people he cared about. And, you know, the process at the time required, you know, of the normal way you would rip thin strips is that, number one, you'd cut them on the, you know, one side of the blade where you'd have to continually move the fence over and over and over. And it would cause a lot of inaccuracies and a lot of waste in the material. Also, once you got a little bit too close to the blade, when the piece of material got smaller, it was no longer safe to use your fingers or hands to pull it through, which is the primary way that usually people would feed. They'd either use their fingers to feed through a table saw, or they use sticks. Like, you know, they'd pick off a stick off the ground, shape it up a little bit, and they literally push through, you know, wood, one of the most dangerous, you know, and powerful power tools in the shop, with pretty bare safety gear and gear in general. So he devised and designed a way to straddle the saw blade, control both pieces of the material, protect your hands all the time you're using it, and feed the material through in a much more stable, much more accurate way. And that became the concept, the idea, the aha moment that said, wow, the world and, you know, my woodworking kinfolk need this. And, you know, so he went down and started making about 45 different prototypes, about 5,000 engineering hours. And this, by the way, is from a man who never graduated college, who didn't have any formal engineering training or background. And did it all out of his garage and you know, with a, you know, fairly simple computer to pull it all together using, you know, CAD drawings, which he had to self-taught on how to actually use the software. And so then we started making that here in the USA. We found a supplier and still do make those products in the USA. And from then on, just continued that seed of creativity and expanded into multiple different product lines. You know, when we'd create something, we'd find a new way to approach a problem. And, you know, just took that obsessive design approach in a sense that, you know, that's a problem where other people might just kind of pass it along and say, oh, I'll find a workaround. We dug in deeper and said, well, let's actually create a solution for this. And that's kind of been a fuel for our innovation. So
that's great. David, you had a question?
No, I was just going to comment that that's wonderful. And I think when you think about the innovation that a person like your father did, with that lack of formal training and just that desire to create something for himself and bring it to the masses is wonderful. I wanted to comment about at this point about also your involvement and when you got involved in that company, because I've been friends with you since college, I mean 2007, 2006 timeframe. And when you got involved in this business, your business acumen and your drive to create something so much larger and instead of being maybe a lifestyle business that produces a good amount of sales, to take it to the next level where you really scale it, that ability that you brought revolutionized Microjig's growth, and I saw that firsthand. And so I'd like you to kind of talk about how you got involved in that process of getting involved as a son to a father like that, and then being able to eventually lead this organization like you're doing today and taking it to the multi-million dollar level that it's at.
Sure, yeah, and I appreciate the kind words. And so, yeah, I guess I grew up in the business, right? Like when he started in 2001, you know, gosh, I was, you know, at that time still, you know, just finishing up or just starting college rather, or finishing up high school, going into college. And so from that point, you know, I'd done all kinds of things, and I'd been, you know, in kind of doing business for myself since I was a little kid, doing, you know, running lemonade stands and, you know, selling and hawking things where I could. It was a great symbiosis in terms of, you know, he was great at making the products and I was great at selling them. And, You know, so I kind of went into the college and kind of studied the business game, right? I love business and I love, you know, the idea of business and the concepts of capitalism. You know, went into studying, you know, everything from, you know, Warren Buffett's, you know, annual letters to, you know, some of the old school like Peter Drucker to, you know, some of the more modern things that you learn about from, you know, Eric Ries and the startup, lean startup and you know, hyperscaling your company like you see when that's happening in Silicon Valley. And so I tried to take a lot of those principles and just apply them into the business. And to your point, I think the mindset at that time for my father was, you know, how can I, you know, make something good and how can I provide for my family, right? I think that was a very big mindset. And then, and boy, did he. And, you know, I can't thank him enough for everything he's done for us. And I just thought that, you know what, I think we could probably, you know, get more of these out to more people. And just wanted to apply a little bit of initiative and drive there. And that's exactly, you know, what we did. We worked as a team. You know, we continue to build our team. But ultimately, I would say it's really easy when you've got a really great product. Well, I wouldn't say it's really easy. I think that kind of puts it, makes it a little bit too misleading because there's a lot of work that is involved with it as far as getting customers and communicating a message well and bringing on the right couple people that at the beginnings and managing that. So, yeah, there's certainly definitely something to be said about that. Where else should I? Where should I mention this? And as you guys probably know, you know, working with your family is not necessarily the easiest thing to do. It can be particularly challenging. And in fact, there was a lot of challenging moments when we did that. You know, there was so many more times than I can count where, like, you know, we would butt heads or we would have, you know, disagreements on how we wanted to run the business or how we wanted to approach a certain thing. You know, and you know, to all those you know, family businesses out there where you have different generations and, you know, different you know, schools of thought, if you will, from, you know, a way you ran, a way you get started, and they're very different skill sets as well from when you're founding a company to when you're managing a company and scaling a company. So each layer has a different set of skills involved with it in terms of, you know, when you're founding, like, you do it all yourself because that's all you can afford, if even that. Whereas when you're growing in customer base as well, now you're managing multiple customers, you're managing your time differently because now you're not maybe necessarily doing the core thing, that you would do as a technician. Now you're doing things like sales, you're doing things like marketing, you're doing things like accounting, you're doing things like lead generation, you're doing things like managing people, hiring people. And these are things that, you know, you do in a different way than you're used to as a beginner and as a starter of a company. And ultimately, you can evolve with those. But I guess what I'm kind of picking at is, you know, you run into situations where, you know, you get into a lot of conflict. And I made that mistake of, you know, just being, you know, very strong-willed, very strong-headed, where I didn't really see how that was, you know, hurting our relationship. And that was a big part of it, that we were, you know, running into a place where, you know, we would disagree and fight about the way the company was going. And we were growing and we were doing well as a company, but there was a lot of back and forth on, like, how we wanted to do it. I think we both shared the same idea of what we were trying to do, but the way we went about it, there was a lot of conflict in that. And the conflict led to disagreements, and that disagreement led to, you know, like a hurting of the relationship. And so there came a point when, you know, I realized this and I saw this happening, and, you know, it took a wake up call for me, but I realized that, you know, if we keep continuing the butt heads like this and proceed in the way we are, you know, the family is going to hurt from it. And it was. And so I had to make a call and say, you know, what can I do to, you know, end the conflict for this? And so I made an offer to my dad to buy out the business. And I said, you know what, I'm willing to buy out the business 100%. And he politely declined. and that was okay with me. I was okay with that outcome. You know, I wasn't necessarily attached to what the outcome had to be. I just knew that I knew that family was more important than business. And that was an important lesson that that I had to learn. And I had to be willing to let go of that path, that route, or that outcome that I was thinking, and be open to, you know, a better way. And so we were very much on our way, you know, kind of parting ways. And but what ended up happening is, you know, he flipped the script and he changed the game on us. And he came back to me and made me an offer. And he offered to sell me 80% of the company while he retained 20%. And it was a remarkable breakthrough. I was like, I was really taken aback because, you know, and many of you founders will know this in terms of how hard it can be to let go. And not only can it be so hard to let go, but also let go to, you know, your son, right? Somebody that you watched grow up, somebody that you had to protect, somebody that you're more worried that they're going to hurt themselves by something that they do just because they don't know better than, you know, anything else. And so to be able to do that was a truly marvelous thing and a truly honorable thing that he did. And yeah, it was the win-win alignment that we needed to make the forward progress that we needed to do. So
thank you for sharing that story. I think that happens a lot with family or with partners, just in general. You know, conflict will come because we're human, right? And mm-hmm. and we're both working, and especially in the entrepreneurial world, we're so passionate about what we're building. What was that turning point that happened? You said you had a wake-up call essentially one day. Can you share what that was with us?
Yeah, certainly. Well, there was a catalytic moment where we had gotten into a heated debate, and we stopped talking for 5 days. And I'd never gone through a period of time where I hadn't talked to him for that long. And I was like, oh, it's a problem. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, well, you know, and again, I was kind of resolute on my intention to end the conflict and continue to move forward. And so that's when I called to dinner and I said, you know, let's come together and let's figure it out. And then that's where it kind of happened. But yeah, that was a big turning point. And I think we're all better for it. But ultimately, it took me a little bit while to kind of wake up and get that message. So, you know.
So when you're in a business, you have a variety of different types of people that you could be working with. And you have some people like that might have an engineering or developer type mindset where they're very concrete. They deal with reality of what is, and they like creating or just focusing on that kind of engineering aspect, not necessarily the realm of possibility and growing and stepping outside of your comfort zone. And so you're dealing on one level with a difference in personality type from an engineer and a visionary marketer type person. And then to add complexity to that, he's your father. And so there's that dichotomy, but it seems like you guys really worked that out and you're smooth sailing now. Your company has grown since you came on. Can you talk a little bit about the growth you've experienced and since you started working with the business more actively after college until today?
Yeah, certainly. Well, we continued to just kind of, you know, add more products. So there was a couple catalytic moments for growth, right? Like one is just kind of getting, the way I look at it is like a product is no good if it just sits on the shelf and it's not being actively promoted. So one, by sheer kind of promotion, getting it out there in front of the customers, getting in front of the people, that's a powerful thing. That's a powerful component right there. I mean, just telling more people. Then you get better at actually telling your story, right? Then you get better at, okay, what is it that people really care about with your product? So you start to define what it is and why people buy. And then you start to get more refined in terms of how do you find those people? And then from when you get better at refining on how to, you know, find those people, how do you, you know, empower them to start talking about it with their friends, right? So that could be done through, you know, kind of video promotions. And we started getting into, you know, social media and building our social media community. We started out and building a sales team nationally in terms of reaching out to our local distributors all across the U.S. And, you know, we started developing better packaging. We started developing better videos. We started developing better promotional programs that drove sales growth or drove attention. And then ultimately, we started coming out with more products as well, right? We came up with more buzz-generating products. We came out with more innovative designs that captivated our audience. And we started to build a reputation, right? People started to get to know us because not only did we make great quality, innovative product, now we started becoming known as the leader of those particular categories, right? So and you know, so then when you have a chance to choose between, you know, the bargain bin product or the first rate company, you know, usually if it comes down to your safety, I think they're going to go for the ones that they're going to trust more to keep their fingers protected. So those things all kind of work together, and as we kind of alluded to before, you know, you also kind of get a couple of really good game-changing partners on board. And we talked about Lowe's, we talked about Home Depot, but one of them for us was also Amazon. Amazon was a tremendous growth channel and is continues to be a tremendous growth channel for us in terms of people, as far as our advertising reach on Amazon, as well as the traffic that goes through Amazon. So, yeah.
That's good. So in the community out there, the DIYers, the people who are building, you know, great things, you know, my father-in-law builds handmade classical guitars, right? Mm-hmm. As you're looking into your community of the people who are building great stuff, what kind of interesting products do you see being built from the people using your products? So what kind of products are you helping people build out there that you find pretty interesting?
Yeah, well, and that's one of our core things, right? Like, is, you know, we try to help people build their dreams, you know, and whether you're dreaming to build heirloom furniture for your children, whether you've always wanted to get into the craft and work with your hands, to, you know, building, you know, those cathedrals and buildings in the sky, right? We provide those products to do so, and we help a lot of people do that. I mean, everyone from, you know, like you said, kind of a DIYer, home hobbyist, to even, we even have people who are blind who now use table saws. Yeah, exactly. It's pretty crazy. You know, yeah. So you kind of wrap your head around that one. But yeah, but you have people that literally can't see and use our product. But I mean, you have so many other people that are getting into the craft because of what we do. And yeah, that's a great source of emotional, you know, fulfillment when you get a chance to read some of those stories, you know, saying that, man, this was the best thing I've ever used. It's, you know, really allowed me to, you know, do things I've never been able to do before. I feel so much more safe, so much more confident. You know, so all of those things really help fuel the fire. Yeah.
That's good then. Do you have, as we kind of end the end of our interview and our conversation together, do you have any advice for people out there who, entrepreneurs who are in a family business, maybe to a son or a father, or daughter and a father, or whatever, mother, but just like we're parent and child, or I don't know the best way to say that. You know what I'm trying to say, guys. But like, do you have any advice for family-based businesses out there where they can, you know, build and grow a company like you guys have, that's success?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and this was a concept that one of my mentors was teaching me about for a long time. And it's not only great for family businesses, it's really great for any business or really any relationship that I found, is just the idea of being in alignment. And, you know, I saw that there were times when we're not in alignment, and oftentimes when, you know, especially as an entrepreneur, as somebody who's driven, you tend to be stubborn, you tend to, you know, go at it, you tend to beat at the problem. But ultimately, that can be often, you know, counterintuitive or counterproductive in a sense. And really, the great way to go about it is to reach an alignment, you know, get into alignment with, you know, your partners, get into alignment with your spouse, get into alignment with your team and associates and employees, get into alignment with your shareholders and stakeholders. And it's easier said than done, because oftentimes you have to be willing to walk away, right? You have to be able to recognize that, you know, when you're not in alignment with somebody, and that either they're not willing or not wanting to get into alignment at this stage or this season, and you have to be ready and willing to say, okay, well, if that's the case, then this relationship's not right at this time, and I'm not going to be a drain on that. I'm not going to take you away from what it is that you want. I'm not going to divert you from what you want out of your life by not being in alignment with you. But I also can't let that happen to me. You know, so if you're, you know, a son, you know, trying to grow in a business, and maybe you're feeling like you're stifled by, you know, what you want to try to do and create, well, then ultimately you have to, you know, look at that decision and say, well, are you in alignment? You know, if you're not in alignment, how can you get in alignment? And if you don't see a clear path towards doing that, or if there's no path at this point, then be okay with that. Be okay with that. You know, don't be so attached to that particular outcome that it has to happen that way. And as long as you, you know, maintain your kind of original purpose, your original intent, you know, your real vision for life, you know, you'll find a way to get there. It may not be a direct path, it might be a roundabout path, but better to do the roundabout path than, you know, than destroy the forest on the way of your relationships.
That is good, man. That's good. Well, are there any things that I should have asked you, any questions that I should have asked you that maybe I didn't think about, or is there anything that you'd like to talk about as we're wrapping up the show?
Let's see. Well, I guess I want to thank you guys for, you know, the things and the work that you guys are doing for the community, you know, putting this content together, building the platforms that you are. You know, I would love to see a thriving and growing and magnificent, you know, Orlando entrepreneurial ecosystem, you know, and, you know, I think there's so much tremendous opportunity. And I think, you know, it's time for Orlando to play bigger. You know, I think Orlando's been selling themselves short. I've been seeing a lot of Orlando entrepreneurs selling themselves short of what they're capable of what their real dreams are, and they're playing scared. And my message to you guys is, you know, scared money don't make money. you know, don't be afraid to really, you know, live out your dreams and do the work that needs to get there. But it can be done. So go make it happen.
Man, that is the best outro that I've ever heard. So I think that that's the best way to end this show. Bruce, thanks for talking with us and David and myself and coming on the show and sharing your advice, telling your personal story and giving that. I like this. Scared money don't make money. So are you guys playing scared out there? Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening into the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. We'll talk with you guys on the next episode. Thanks, Bruce.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.